The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Today, Simmer, I think we're going to be out a little bit over our skis on this topic. We've got the man, the myth, the legend, Max Runge with us, and we're going to talk about the new budget reconciliation bill.
Yes, that's right.
On July the 4th.
In our world, that's the technical terminology.
That's right, yes.
So a lot of information out there on it, and it's relation to agriculture. So obviously that's where we're going to stay in our agricultural lane. But I've just seen a lot of positive things about what it's going to mean for the agricultural industry. And so we want to talk about how that's going to help Alabama farmers.
All right. And before sort of we get into that, I think it's important to sort of look back and see where we are in this climate. We're supposed to have a farm bill every 5 years. Mm-hmm. There was one passed in 2014, 2018, and then the next one was 2024. The 2024 farm bill has been extended two times. The outlook for getting a brand new farm bill is not the best in the world. So when they were able to use the budget reconciliation bill to get some agricultural components in there, it's been great. Another thing that's worth remembering is that when we were at the 2014 farm bill, a lot of the price levels, reference prices, were coming off of higher commodity prices. Mm-hmm. Since then, those commodity prices have not been as strong, and those reference prices, you know, really didn't kick in. But you're right, Scott, there are a lot of things in this that are very positive for agriculture, and we're pretty excited.
So the farm bill is kind of completely different from this, but they were able to do some things in this bill to help.
That's correct. I think there's like 12 or 13 provision or chapters in the farm bill, or titles is the correct mm-hmm. term. And so typically we're only concerned about the commodities title. Yeah. And this has a number of components that are tied to that and make it good for agriculture.
Okay. Now, obviously, there were a lot of things in this bill, you know, and I like the fact that Scott said there are a lot of positive things. You know, I've been also hearing about a lot of other things. So maybe let's start with all the positives, and maybe if there are some concerns or something, we'll probably touch that later too, you know.
Okay.
So what's the biggest thing, I guess, that benefits us or our growers?
There's a couple of things that stand out to me, and one of them is the reference prices for our commodities. We've seen increases. Soybeans have gone from $8.40 a bushel up to 10. Seed cotton from 36.7 cents a pound to 42 cents a pound. Corn up to 410. Peanuts from $536 a ton to 630, and wheat was 550 up to 635. And I know that's a lot of numbers
Let me interject and ask the first of many dumb questions I'll ask today. That reference price is the lowest guaranteed price you'll pay.
That you would receive. That's right.
Yes.
And there are a lot of other.
If it goes lower, if cotton price goes below 40 whatever cents, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. You know, nobody's going to grow cotton. But if it goes below that, they'll pay you up to that point.
That's correct. Basically setting a floor. All right. Now, on the cotton, it does get a little complicated.
Yeah.
Because it's not a straight cotton price.
Okay.
Is the government paying the difference to get it to the reference?
That's right, yeah.
It's the government paying whatever the difference between the reference
right.
price and the whatever.
Or if it goes below
price,
that reference price, they'll pay
then
the difference.
They pay the
and
difference.
As soon as you said something about $8 beans, I knew that cotton number was in the 40 cent range. And I was like, well, that don't sound fair. So I'm glad you
So where
you're
are
about
we with
to,
beans today?
Right now, beans are a little over $10.
Okay.
So it's close to that reference price.
So does any of our commodity prices right now are below the reference price?
No, not well, hold it. I say no. No, we're close on several of them.
Oh,
on
okay.
corn and soybeans are there.
Gotcha.
The cotton one, like I say, it's a little different. They call it seed cotton, not cotton seed, but seed cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And that came about because in the 2014 Farm Bill, there was no provisions for cotton, because of the World Trade Organization and lawsuits from that. So they couldn't provide a floor for cotton. So they worked it out, I believe it was the 2018 Farm Bill or some point, where they take our lent price and the cotton seed price and combine it to get a pound per price. And so you'd have to work it out.
When we usually talk about a cotton price, that's just lent.
That's correct. Right? Right. That's just lent.
What and the growers are selling it for. And the gents can do whatever with the seed.
Well, yeah, and that's a whole other thing, too. Some of them, it used to be that they gave it back to the farmers or they would give them credit, so they basically get credit for that cotton seed.
Okay.
Now, the prices on a lot of commodities, it's based on the exchanges, like Chicago Mercantile Exchange or, in the case of cotton, International ICE Exchange. And then there's premiums or discounts based on quality and for all the products. So, and then a basis goes along with that too, but it's basically there. So it's good to have a floor. Obviously in agriculture, you know, we are very dependent on the weather. A lot of times we do have things that we can overcome, irrigation, but that doesn't always solve all the problems. So, you know, we need a floor so that in case something bad happens, we don't lose everything.
Yeah.
It just would be nice if that floor was remotely close to our break-even line.
That would be correct. Nice. Yes, that's a very
well. Good. Does the with everything with the fluctuations in the market or the prices, all that? I guess in our break-even is also kind of dynamic in a way, or does that stay a little bit more consistent?
No, you're correct. They are dynamic, and it, you know, a lot of times when you ask an ag economist a question, his answer is, well, it depends. Well, that break-even price depends. It depends on a lot of stuff. You know, if you're using brand-new equipment, your break-even is a lot different than someone who's already owned, paid for.
Yeah.
And, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's and then, you know, the weather comes in on production and all that. You know, another thing we always sometimes lose sight of is we operate in a world market. And so it doesn't matter necessarily what our neighbors do or what another state does, but or what happens across the U.S., but it's what happens across the world in a lot of our products. And we're competing with other countries, and a lot of other countries have subsidies on those crops that the government gives those growers that our growers don't
get.
So sometimes it's not, you know, it's not a level playing field. And that's what the, you know, U.S. producers want, is a level playing field.
Yeah. And we're seeing that right now with, I know the most recent USDA plantings report came out, and I don't know that I agree with it. They didn't survey me. But, you know, the market really hasn't responded to any report, you know, anything in like you would expect. But we are playing in a much bigger market than just over here.
That's right. Yeah, we're world competitor, or we have world competitors, and it depends on what happens in other places.
Okay. All right. Prices, increasing reference prices. What's next?
Okay. There's a provision in this budget reconciliation bill that's adding a one-time allocation to new base acres up to 30 million acres. This is the first time since 2002 that there's been a chance to change base acres. Now, why that is important is because the growers that are enrolled in with the government, they can enroll in a program and get, they have their base acres, so their production, if it changes, they can get, they're eligible for programs and assistance in various ways. Because some of the payments are decoupled from production. So a lot of the farmers that had base acres have retired, and those base acres were lost. So we've got a lot of newer and or younger producers that are out there that are producing, have no base acres, so they're ineligible to qualify for some of the programs that are out there.
Dumb question again, going back. Base acres, how does that work with the grower and all this?
Define base acres.
I've had this explained to me by three different people, and I still have no idea. So Max is going to break it down.
Define base acres for people like us.
Yeah.
Because you said, like, the older farmers or the previous generation, they had base acres, but the newer don't. So even though they're operating the same farm.
So I'm going to go with how I understand it. It may or may not be right. Scott was right. You know, people, you ask three different people, you get three different answers. So years ago, we used to have allotments on farm commodity. There was allotment for cotton. There was allotment for tobacco. There was allotment for sugar. And there was an allotment for some other things, which meant that basically the government was trying to hold down production so that people would have an opportunity to make money. Like a lot of other things, it was based on politics. The South had very strong politicians, so that's why you saw a lot of these programs with cotton, tobacco, and peanuts that were in there. So they had a base or an allotment. They did away with the allotment, but they kept the base acres on how they were doing. And then corn and soybeans have sort of come in the program because they hadn't always been on that. So they were, it's only based on acres and sometimes production. So like peanuts used to be tons was an allotment. And so if you had so much of that, you were guaranteed a price on that. So they did away with that, did away with the guaranteed price, but they have set those base prices on there.
Good.
So now the, and this is one of the, I guess negative things on these base acres is that they are decoupled from production, which means if I owned a lot of land and I had base, a historical base on that, I don't have to produce those crops to get a payment from the government if there was one that was triggered. So, you know, I could own the land or
and
own
still
the
get
boat
the payment.
And go get a payment, but I wasn't producing. So, so that was, you know, there's a little bit of heart.
So is that a scenario I can think of very common, people who rent land, the owner gets the payment, whereas the girl
right, and they've that's the way it used to be, and they've changed some of that, and I'm not exactly sure how all the it works. But when the 2014 Farm Bill came out, there was you had to make a decision whether it was ARC, Agricultural Revenue Protection, or PLC, price protection. And the landowner made that decision, and which was extremely confusing because we had a lot of people that rented land, and I had one producer tell me, he said, I've got 32 landlords, and a lot of them are older. He said, I'm struggling to understand this farm bill, and now I've got to go ask them to sign, to choose one. And he said, it's a little stressful and all that. So it is that it's supposed to go to the landowner, and then they were working on getting ways that the payment would stay with the producer. So there's a lot of intricacies in this, and what it is today is different than what it was 5 years ago, what it was 20 years ago.
So are there numbers for each crop in the bill that increased? Or
it, all I saw is that creating up to 30 million acres of new base for producers who do not have base on their farm or whose average planted and prevented planted acres from 2019 to 23 exceed their current base acres on the farm. So the base acres does stay with the farm and the land.
Gotcha.
Is there a limit to how much base you can have?
As far as I know, there's not. Where the limits come in is on the payment side. Prior to this increase, the payment limit was $125,000, and now it's increased up to $155,000.
That's the total across a farm.
Yes.
Doesn't matter, you know, if you have more acreage than what that payment will amount to, that's where you're getting capped at, and
right.
That's the max
for all your base acres.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the original base plan was actually to reduce the amount of acres. Basically, you kind of had a little safety net there, and the idea was people won't plant a whole lot above this base because there's no safety net.
Right, that's okay. Correct.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So they were basically trying to control production, which equaled price. So
was that if I remember right, when I learned in school, That would have been after the PIC plant, PIC program or whatever?
Well, no, Base Acres was even before
it
the PIC.
Before that, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The PIC was payment in kind, yeah. But it was, yeah.
That, then they were just paying them, similar. You probably didn't learn this. It's an undergrad type thing you learn, but they're paying them just not to plant.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the payment in kind was like if you needed corn, if you were a fed livestock and you needed corn, they would pay you in corn that equivalent.
Yeah, they would just give it. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty.
All right. Yeah. So I was curious because I saw this and, okay, there's no number even for peanuts because Peanut Commission posted some of the things related to the peanut production. And the reference price went from $5.35 to $6.30, which you, I think, mentioned about it, limitations. But the base acres, all it says is 30 million new base acres.
So, and that's, I guess, one of the things with these bills that get passed. And from what I understand, it was a huge bill, a lot of pages in it, that some of the details have to be worked out. I remember working on the 2014 Farm Bill, working with some of the USDA people. They said, you know, they passed it, but we hadn't got the details yet. We're still waiting on that. So that's one of those things, you know, to be determined is
got you.
Used okay. a lot.
And so that could even mean what crops receive those base acres or what regions of the state get them, or that would be more dependent on the crops.
It's on the crops, yeah. And sort of, and I guess, you know, determining how many acres are not under base.
And it also, you said, if I remember, it's based on the last like 5 years of production, and those with lesser production are more likely to get base.
Yes, so that's correct.
That would likely help Alabama farmers who have very little irrigation and those types of things. So maybe that plays into our favor over the I states
that's a different
production system.
Yeah, that's right. Because up there, you know, they basically choose between soybeans or corn.
Right. Yeah.
And we have options. But yeah, it is, you know, and I think this is a good thing because they look at the years, it's 2019 through 2023. And, you know, and we
had Hurricane Michael in there.
Hurricane Michael, well, he was 18. But
Not
we
Michael.
Also stress crop rotation. So, you know,
right,
if you just look at
right.
1 year, you may have something heavier than something
right,
else.
Right.
So it does help with us when we're looking at crop rotations.
We had Helene in there.
That's right. Helene is in
Helene.
There.
So is the payment limitation, is that what relate to base acre, or is that a different thing?
No, it's just
okay,
in general.
It says that it went from older was 125,000 and the new is 155,000.
And
what
then,
does that mean?
Well, that's how much you, if you qualify for, if you hit the safety net or you hit, if you use revenue protection, and revenue protection, there's a whole big old long thing on how it's calculated, but it's basically price times your production.
Mm.
And you should, you know, you have an average of, let's just say $500
uh-huh.
an acre in revenue, and you get below that, that will get you close to it. The other thing I think to think about this is these safety nets are not made to make you whole.
Yeah.
That they are there to help to protect you from a catastrophic ending. And another thing that we do look at is with crop insurance, which is sort of along the same lines, and it is subsidized by the government, and the subsidies are increasing a little bit. But the producers themselves have skin in the game other than all their costs because they have to pay for that crop insurance
right.
and hope that they never have to use it.
Just like me with car insurance.
That's correct.
You pay for it. You never
use it. But.
I heard a long time ago that insurance is a guaranteed loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the other side of that is you can't stand to be totally wiped out.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. What other stuff in there?
It's pretty wide ranging. It goes
okay.
to other things just besides our row crop commodities.
Mm-hmm.
There are some trade program provisions that increase some funding through market access program, foreign market development, through that. So, which is pretty interesting because, you know, we're wanting to develop foreign markets, and then we're talking tariffs and some other things like that. So it's good that we are trying to develop these markets and to increase our market availability and on our ag products. Ag products, depending on which product you look at, you know, almonds, we export like 98% of our almonds to other parts of the world. We export between 75 and 80% of our cotton to other parts of the world, and it goes and gets spun and made into cloth and whatever, and we import it back in. But anyway, soybeans about 50%, corn about 20%, and cattle about 10%. And I think poultry is along in that 10% as well. So some of these products we don't need a lot of help in, but some of them we could stand to export more and help our domestic prices on that.
Some of this stuff, it helped to export less. If we had the industry right now with cotton, we're selling cotton at wholesale prices and buying it back at retail.
That's correct.
It'd be nice if we still had the infrastructure to spin it here.
You're correct. And if we do need some of that infrastructure here and bringing it back, you know, we've got some small examples. Redland Cotton is one. They're doing some spinning and processing cotton in the States. We do need more of that. And it's a challenge, though. So it's
a lot of money in the infrastructure and all that to get it going.
Yes, it is.
And then people to work.
Right, labor's a huge thing. Yeah. You know, just looking at agriculture, from what I can remember, I grew up in North Alabama, and there were two cotton gins within 3 miles of my house. And now there's probably nowhere, there's not one within 50 miles, really. So we lost that. Dairy is another industry that we've lost the infrastructure in. And when we don't have those milk processing facilities, you know, it's sort of a egg chicken versus thing. You know, you got to have the milk to have the processing facilities for the milk. If you don't have the processing, you're probably not going to haul the milk along. Well, the same thing with cotton and some of our other commodities. On a positive note on that, though, you know, Alabama's a corn deficit state, but we grow a lot of poultry. So our corn goes to most of our poultry processing facilities.
Didn't I mention on the last podcast, all of our corn, grain production, corn and soybean, gets consumed within a week?
Well, it's not quite right.
Well, maybe North Alabama's, but that, they said that it's actually a week. That all the North Alabama production, maybe.
It could be North Alabama. I've run some numbers for the
maybe Etowah County or something.
Right. I don't know. Like, the people who were exporting it, they were like, we only open this for export.
Yeah.
You know, or not really export. Like, when we take, when it is, we only close it for like a week or two when they're actually running our, and then it's over, and then we start getting in more from other.
So, it's, you know, it obviously depends on acres and yield. But basically, 135 days we provide if all our corn went to the poultry industry or broiler industry. You would do that. And I think last year it was down to like 85 days because yields were down. So we only were able to provide that. So it's there. The other thing on that, a lot of the poultry industries will work with producers to store the corn on farm and then deliver it in one of the advantages is we end up with a positive basis on that, where the Midwest that grows a lot of corn does not have.
So. Yeah. So there's some positive news for our poultry producers.
There's a, you know, one of the things our contract poultry growers, they don't have a lot of control over, you know, they don't price the chickens and they don't price the feed. What they have to pay for is the utilities and the buildings. So there's a provision in there to establish a poultry insurance pilot program to index energy-related costs related to extreme weather-related things. So if it gets really, really cold and the poultry producers have to buy a lot of extra natural gas or LP gas, there's an index and an insurance product that will be developed to help them offset that extra cost. And same thing in the summer, whether it's with fans on the electricity or extra water on cooling fans that they have.
Kind of need that at my house this summer.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I wish there was a provision to help us with the electricity bill in the summer. Right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well,
so I see you got a bunch of other stuff highlighted. What is all that about?
This is just a little background on some of this.
Okay.
But, you know, and part of the reason we talk about this is that the government, and I'll say Congress, has tried to set up safety nets to protect our producers,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the primarily things that affect our profitability are prices, yields, and cost. We can't do a whole lot about the input cost that we have, and a lot of times we can't do anything about yields because that's on weather. And we've mentioned this, and it's been mentioned numerous times before, but food safety and security is key, and it truly is a national security issue,
mm-hmm.
in that we don't want to have to depend on other countries for our food. I think it's a great thing that we can go to the grocery store in December or January and buy a watermelon that's not necessarily grown in the U.S., but we have that option that's there. But we don't want to have to depend on other countries for our food.
Yeah.
So that's
all the stuff we're mentioning. I just want to make clear, everything like this base acres or other increase in reference prices, this is for the next year's crop.
It's going to be for the 2025 crop.
Oh, it is.
It is. So it is for the 2025 crop. But
payments will probably be in 26.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's on the row crops especially, they don't know what the season average price will be until the following marketing year. So for most things, that's after September 1st. So if there was a crop in 2025 that was planted that triggers a payment, that payment would be received probably at the end of 2026, which is another challenge for agricultural producers because, you know, that's a cash flow issue. You invest all this money and you make those payments and then you don't get a payment for, you know, 12 to 15 months later. So
when the bill is passed and all that, is it more like our documents over here that it's effective from today when it gets signed on or whatever, or is it like there's a start date?
It depends.
Okay.
In this bill, it does say this, it takes effect in the 2025 crop. A lot of these details still have to be worked out, and they have to work through some of the minute stuff that's there. So, you know,
even if it gets passed, there's still some stuff like these details that... So when it gets passed, mean the heading, the title gets, like whatever that number is,
right.
gets signed on, but everything under it could still be...
Right. Changed.
Still need to be worked right. out and changed. Okay.
Yeah. So just like those base acres we talked about, they're going to add 30 million. How that gets divided up,
we don't know. Oh,
it hadn't decided yet. You know, the best advice is to make sure you stay in contact with your Farm Service Agency and USDA people and, you know, keep that relationship open and do all you can to work with them and be in touch with them.
Or call Max Runge.
Not quite sure he always has the right answers.
Well, I think I've asked about all I'm qualified to ask. Not qualified, but all I can think to ask. But I learned a lot. Anything else, Max? Are we important points to make?
Just, again, keep those relationships with the FSA office and all that, because a lot of these details haven't been worked out yet. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they come up with this. The final answer on this.
Do they have a certain date that they need to decide all this, or just kind of as it goes.
Sort of as it goes. They've started working on it now, I know, and usually it takes months.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, things will be a little more clear by the end of the year for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there still could be some changes in there.
All right. Well, hey, again, a lot of good information. I feel like I know this much more than I knew when I started, which is actually a lot if you knew how much I knew when we started. So appreciate that, Max, and your time, Simmer.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think we were planning to get you on last year, but I felt like this is a great opportunity to kind of learn more about, the bill and everything. And like you said, you were the best choice.
Well, there's a lot to it, and it's not just straightforward. So, some of this stuff may not be quite exactly right, but I did the best that I knew.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again. Also, hey, good to have Jacob back in the room with us on the production board over there. So Simmer doesn't have to worry about doing that. But
and hopefully by the time this comes out, which we'll hope to push this sooner, I was just thinking about, we got field days coming up.
That's right.
The state. I don't have all the dates, but maybe they're posted on the extension website.
Yeah, they should be posted on the extension
website.
But it's
the last week of July and the first week of August that will be.
So we've got the East Alabama Crops Tour on July 22nd,
mm-hmm.
Society Hill. We've got the Tennessee Valley field day at the experiment station in Belmonte on July 30th. And then we've got my phone messed up. Gulf Coast is on August the 1st, Friday, August 1st. Bruton is on Tuesday, August 12th. And Wiregrass is on Friday, August 15th.
Nice.
So those, again, if you're on any newsletters with your local agent or our team newsletters as well, those dates are out there. Hope to see everybody there, hopefully in good shape.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, as always, appreciate our listeners. If there's anything anybody with Alabama Extension can ever do to help, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know. And we'll be back with another episode shortly.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.